sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets around the world gain in November. Europe's ESM is downgraded by Moody's. The fiscal cliff debate, debacle, and rhetoric continues. We have a guest today that's a good one. Sid Oberoi is from S&P VIX Views, and we're going to talk about the VIX. Lots more about what to do in December, and you're going to have a good time today because I am packed with information. All this and much more on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 291. Well, welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, and I am quite a bit better from last week where I had the sniffles and the cold and the cough, and man, I was not feeling very well, so thanks for putting up with me, probably sounding pretty rotten, because I was feeling pretty rotten. I got to tell you something, it was one of those things that was just, you know, just wouldn't go away. But anyway, we have lots to talk about today because we are entering the last month of the year, and in that time, often we look for the Santa Claus rally and look for all sorts of excuses to performance chase with regard to what the hedge funds are doing and the mutual funds. And, you know, we have to look at this as an interesting time in the markets. Both January, where sometimes you get that January effect where small caps outperform large caps and all that, but oftentimes January or the beginning of a month or the end of a month often brings some strange trading. As a matter of fact, on Friday, which was the end of November, we saw that during the last several minutes, all of a sudden, markets just screamed higher for no apparent reason. And of course, when you look back on it and you see what happened right after the close, where the futures came down sharply and took back all those gains, about 4 or 5 points on the S&P 500, 35, 40 basis points for the S&P 500, you realize that there was something going on. And what it was obviously the end of month rebalancing by some indices, but as well, we saw the window dressing, the final making of your portfolio molded to how you want to look to your investors when you have to present it. And a lot of mutual funds and hedge funds do that on a regular basis. And we've talked about that before. So this is something you have to really pay attention to and realize that it's nothing to really get too excited about, nothing to get too worried about, because your positioning in your portfolio should be set in a way right now that is rather defensive. At least that we think that you should be looking for really good quality stocks that have upside opportunity based on not only technicals and fundamentals, but you also want to look at where we are in the cycle of investing. And right now, when you look at the trend of the markets, you can see that they kind of hold two different, you can kind of put together both a bull and a bear case. From a technical standpoint, you kind of have to be a bit in the bearish camp where you really can't eclipse certain key support areas that were previously support, but now become resistance. So they flip flop around depending on where you are on what side of that equation. And right now we're really right at the key resistance points of most markets: the Nasdaq, the S&P 500, etc. And when you look at that, you have to realize that until we see a significant ability for markets and investors to push it over and hold it and move that higher from here, you have to believe that the trend still remains, that we are leaning towards a downtrend. That doesn't mean it's absolutely going to be there forever, but that's where you're going to be leaning right now until proven otherwise. In fact, if you recall, I guess it would be 2 weeks ago, we talked about the KRI, the key reversal indicator that we have developed and really spent a lot of time on. And it was showing a very oversold condition. We called it on a Thursday, and the market started popping and reversing actually on that Thursday, which was really good timing. And it really kind of ramped higher because there was a tremendous amount of built-up selling pressure that just abated. You just sell so long till you see a pop. And sometimes you call that a dead cat bounce or, you know, just a quick contra-trend rally, whatever you want to call it in the selling cycle, you see these kind of things happen. And then what ends up being a turn in the trend is when that continues for some time. When you see that there is stalling in the markets, when you see that you're having a question as to really the direction that hasn't broken through key resistance levels, you have to assume that the trend continues for some time. And a matter of fact, we've already reached a plus two on the overheated scale. So we went from about a minus 5.6, which was really oversold from historical perspectives on the KRI indicator, all the way to Friday, where we're a plus three, which is now entering the overheated zone. And what does that mean? Well, what we want to see on a constant basis is markets in equilibrium. This is a big picture discussion. You know, this is not individual stocks. This is a big picture discussion. Markets in equilibrium will say that the trend will continue, whatever that underlying trend may be. And that can continue for some time without markets getting overheated or oversold to a significant degree where you have to be looking for a reversal. So now again, we're looking for this reversal, right? We're looking for, when do these reversals occur? Well, usually when we're somewhere about in the negative 5 range to a positive 5 range, in other words, when you're more than that, that's when you have to be really alert and aware of what is going to happen next. So right now, we're at about a plus 3, give or take, but yet at the same time, when we have a downtrend that has been in place for some time, and you see the quick move like we did on the upside, the contra trend rally, you have to now say, wait a minute, do I really want to be super long in this situation? Because everything that I'm seeing right now still contains the previous or current trend components. Putting it simply, it means that right now we are oversold. I wouldn't be surprised the markets to pull back from here. Doesn't have to be a large pullback, but it has to be pulled back from that recent big move that we saw. And probably there is some support in the about the 1390 range, 1385 range for the S&P 500, and that would probably bring it back if it happens at a reasonable level. And you'd rather see this happen over a few days in small amounts and clips to bring things back in line. You know, the big drops that are very significant and the big jolts on the upside that are very intense, very short-lived, oftentimes lead to quick reversals as well. So you'd rather see this in a constrained manner that has a few days, maybe a week, of overall downward movement in the markets to bring it back into equilibrium. So I just want to kind of tell you what's going on there. There's something else I want to mention to you. I want to mention this at the top of the show. This is very important, and I think it's something that a lot of people have been asking for, and we're finally launching it. You know, we have the Trigger Point research site that we work with, equities, and a lot of you have taken a look at the 14-day free trial. You've checked it out. A lot of you have subscribed, and I'm glad for that because it's really hitting some great, great returns for you, and I'm very pleased about that. But what a lot of people had asked for is, what about commodities? You know, what are you doing about commodities? What are you doing about S&P futures? What are you doing about the U.S. Treasury 10-year futures? What are you doing about corn futures? Da-da-da-da-da. You know, kind of down the road. Well, we have now come up with a similar program, whereas you get text messages and email alerts. You have a website that you can track the performance. You can look at what's going on. And with very, very specific sell stops, price target where we hit, whether you go short or long, and a very confined amount of securities with very specific, let's say, ranges for when you buy and when you sell. Now, you're not going to be buying and selling all the time. You may get one every few days. You may get five in a week. But the fact is, these are very short-term, very highly scrubbed, high-confidence trades that we have pulled off with the TAS professional tools that we use. And you are going to find that it's a very interesting structure. There is a 14-day free trial available for that too. These are for people who trade commodities. You have to understand how to trade futures and commodities, understand there's a big difference in terms of the requirements, in terms of how you trade them, the risk associated with them, et cetera. There's a whole list of risk that you need to, a risk and disclosures that you need to look into and understand about this. But if you are trading commodities, or if you want to trade commodities and you have some experience and you want to have these alerts, it is available now on a 14-day free trial. So go check that out over at triggerpointresearch.com, or on the disciplinedinvestor.com. You can check out on this particular podcast episode on the show notes. There is a link right to that. So definitely check that out. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, we have markets around the world that were up in the month of December. Even some markets just squeaked by a little bit. There was some, actually China hit a 2009 low in November. That was probably one of the holdouts. Japan was all excited about the potential for new stimulus, and the yen was moving in the right direction for their market. Europe was kind of excited that the U.S. may or may not fall into a recession at this point. Some of the numbers looked a little bit better, and there was hope that the fiscal cliff would be quote-unquote solved. And if you want my commentary on the word solved, you have to go back to last week's episode and realize that there is no solution to the fiscal cliff. There is just a compromise and an agreement that will be made, because no matter what that is not a viable solution to the fact that we have an ever-increasing deficit and we have, obviously, debt that is outstanding that is going to one day be unsustainable. So when I'm not going to bore you with my rant from last week, but you need to go listen to that episode if you haven't done so. But yeah, it was okay. You know, it was kind of like the last number of days. There was some positive feedback on what's happening in the U.S., and that really helped out the rest of the world. You know, at the same time, the economics in Europe and in Japan are still really just lousy. China over the weekend did come out with a It was worse than expected, but it is better than it has been in months, their industrial and manufacturing number. And that was actually good to see. It was over 50, and that was beneficial. But still, it's not in anything more than stall speed. It's kind of just above the expansion zone. Better than being below it, of course, in contraction. But at the same time, it is something to be aware of that may be looked as a positive. But the downgrade of the European ESM by Moody's, which was the second downgrade, S&P downgraded some time ago, is not really something that we should be looking at as a positive. As a matter of fact, the euro has been doing very, very well, had a very good month over, clipped the 130 range after dropping down very significantly over hopes that something is going to be solved over there. But at the same time, we're seeing that their economy is still faltering. We're seeing that there's still a lot of problems there. And now with the ESM being downgraded, I think this is a real wake-up call to everybody out there that says that, you know, there's some hope of Europe solving their problems. While they did give Greece some leeway, we, of course, did see also France downgraded. Germany may be downgraded also because their economy is suffering, because what they're doing is taking all of their gains and things that did well for them in over the history, and they're just plowing it into saving Greece as well. And a lot of the things that are going on there right now are, you know, more rhetoric and hope and nothing more than continuing to, as I hate to say this, but kicking the can down the road, because there is no solution they've come up with to any of this besides pouring in more money and just delaying the inevitable. Greece got, you know, this great package, which, you know, was unbelievable. Already Spain is saying they're not going to meet their deficit numbers, and we're seeing that in the UK, they're going to be slowing down on their quantitative easing, and they're going to keep tight with their and hold tight to their austerity measures. And overall, the banking sector, while the yields have come down on sovereigns, the banking sector is still a mess in Europe. There's no question about that. So I would kind of keep a look at that. We actually went short on the Europe and the Euro about 2 weeks ago, which is not doing well for us, but at the same time, and for our client portfolios, but at the same time, I do think that the longer term trade on this is a very smart one, because if you look at the comparison of the U.S. to the European zone, you have to say that if you were to take a spread trade, you'd probably want to be long U.S. and short Europe, because just the nature of the two should be that the U.S. is a bit stronger. And the dollar is going to be stronger than the Europe region in terms of their economies and the euro as a currency. So, you know, you got to think about really what's going on there and when it's finally going to burst, and when, you know, the realization of all of this crap they're trying to feed us is going to come to a reality. And we realize that, you know what, this isn't going to be solved here. And all of the excess amount of upside that we've seen recently is really a bad idea and to really be buying into. So that's our thinking on that. But, you know, we have to also then fold into this discussion the idea of what's going to happen with the fiscal cliff, because this really deals with the whole world. And already we're seeing that President Obama wants to raise taxes by $1.6 trillion over a number of years and also start with a $50 billion spending package, which is kind of interesting because all along, while we know that he was going to keep on pressing for taxes for the highly the wealthy and the higher income earners, I'm not sure where I recall ever saying there was going to be a stimulus package or another package coming out of spending, because if I'm thinking correctly, the whole idea of what's going on with the fiscal cliff is to restrain spending so that we can kind of get our deficit and debt in order. And I just am very confused as to why all of a sudden this whole idea of an additional spending package is coming out when we're really supposed to be cutting back. And in fact, even cutting back by some expenses and taxing just the higher income and wealthy individuals in the country is not going to provide enough revenue to meet the needs of cleaning up the situation. So we have him talking about that and sticking to their ground, and the White House saying this is the plan they have and they're not budging. And then we have the Republicans coming out, and Boehner, and you know, a variety of different players coming out and saying, hey, you know what, we don't like this. We'll maybe increase some of the revenue by some changing deductions and maybe some of the code, but not directly for increasing taxes. And, you know, of course, at the same time, they want to stop all of the excess spending that's going on in terms of, you know, various programs. And the White House says, no, we're not going to do that. So, you know, I think the commentary that came out when Obama said Friday that there's going to be a long and drawn out negotiation, and when Boehner and all of them said that they've made no progress, I think there's some truth in that. And I'm not quite sure how that's going to change anytime soon. It is what it is. Each side is very stubborn. They're going to do what they can to try to milk as much time out of this as they can. And probably, as has been known by our very dysfunctional government, come to the last hour on this and then spook the crap out of all of us as to what's going to happen. And the longer that they wait, every day, every minute, every second that ticks by until the end of December, when they can make a decision, clouds the situation. It causes a disruption to confidence, and it causes a inability for businesses to make any kind of reasonable decision, which also means that anything they're going to be doing for capital expenditures, hiring, is going to be put off. Now, this week, we have some very important numbers coming out. We have the ISM number coming out on Monday, and we're going to see what's happening with manufacturing. But more importantly, we're going to see what's going on and the effects of Hurricane Superstorm Sandy on Friday when it comes to the jobs numbers. Now, Wednesday, we'll see the ADP numbers, which is a little bit of a preview, somewhat, of what's going to happen with the non-farm numbers. But the expectations right now are for the employment rate to go up just ever so slightly and for maybe 100,000 to be hired on of new jobs. Now, I would say that there may be some problems with the data next week. So far, we've seen that analysts have really done a very, very poor job at estimating the effects of Sandy, which is usually the case. They kind of underplay what's going on. They underplay the effects of any of these natural disasters, just like what happened in Japan. And, you know, they really can't quantify it anyway because they really don't have the data and abilities to do so. And so they look for a best case scenario. And I got to tell you something, what I'm seeing right now is a lot of the economic numbers coming out and getting a little bit softer here. And I do have some concerns over the numbers that we're going to see next week. So I would be very, very in tune and in touch with what's going on, because if you think about all the things that are happening right now, the confluence of events between the fiscal cliff, the poor economics around the world, and what's going on here in terms of the potential for not only the effects of the hurricane and all that to be hitting, but also the confidence levels of consumers to be hit, I do wonder what's going to go on. Now, we did see some inventories rise over the last few weeks, and that is good for GDP, as I've always discussed. It's negative, though, for manufacturing if the sales aren't there. And already we've seen that, you know, contrary to some media and some discussions that this is a great, you know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and all that, it really wasn't that great. A lot of companies are coming in with some disappointing outlook, and especially the higher cost and the kind of upper echelon of the brands. Like, you know, you look at some companies that you have to be concerned about, like Tiffany came out with their earnings and they, you know, came down on their estimates. And you look at even some of the mid-range and you know, young adult wear and surfer wear, like Azumi's, you know, they really got lower and missed. And you have to look at what's gone on, I think, now with some of the higher level ones. We're on the lookout with Michael Kors and Vera Bradley as examples. After we saw the miss by Tiffany, I think that we have to be on the shorter side of these discussions when it comes to some of the higher end luxury items than maybe some of the mid range, you know, like the Walmarts, the Targets, and discount stores for that matter. And one of the things about this also is that it's been kind of a lumpy season when it comes to retail sales. By lumpy, I mean, you know, it's not clear across the board that all luxury is a problem or all discount is a problem or good or all mid-range big boxes are good or bad. It's kind of been very lumpy. You know, Kohl's came out and it was really not so good. And, you know, you're still having that problem with JCPenney, which we actually entered a long position on, kind of on that big old dip when we saw that there was some basing going on that on the stock, and that's actually been rewarding. But at the same time, you have to look at some of the names out there that you, again, want to be aware of. And just, again, just to point this home, just keep a look at Michael Kors and Vera Bradley as something that you want to take a look at. Gun companies have been doing very well. Have you seen that? Sturm Ruger came out with the earnings. They dipped down, but then they just shot right back up. No pun intended there, or maybe it was. But it moved right back up, and they came up with a special dividend, and that stock just ran like crazy. That was really a great... We talked about this about three episodes ago, about watching the gun companies. Hopefully, you got in on either Smith & Wesson or on Sturm Ruger. That was really great. And, you know, one of the things that we saw with Sturm was, you know, this whole special dividend that they put out, and we're seeing more companies probably than ever putting out special dividends before the end of the year, because what's going to happen if the dividend rate goes up? Well, you know, people that expect dividends and have been getting dividends, they're not going to have the chance to get it at such a tax advantage level. Now, when you look at that, you have to think, well, that's great. They're giving these special dividends out, and companies that do so probably have the money to do it, and they feel very confident that they could do so. But realize that it's a lot of these companies that are closely held, or that management has a majority of the ownership or a good chunk of the ownership, maybe that are cash heavy, but also it just goes to the fact that there is a lot of uncertainty. There is also discussion about how that's good for the economy. You know, special dividends. You get all this money in all of a sudden and you go spend it. Well, yes and no. It's good for a while, but when that dividend is paid, the stock price will probably adjust down a bit for that dividend. And so, you know, you may or may not be as well, you know, well off. You know, it's also good for the government because they collect more taxes on that. Well, I'll give you that. That's actually good. Who knows? Maybe the reason why they're dilly-dallying on this whole fiscal cliff issue is so that companies will spit out as much dividends as they can so they can collect some excess taxes on it. Huh. Who would have thought? It's possible. No question about that. So I think the special dividends, you're going to see the continuation of this. And we talked about this probably 4 weeks ago, that you're going to be on the watch out for all these fiscal cliff special dividends that are going to be coming out. And I think that that's something that has been very beneficial, because there is a thought that, you know, hey, I'm not going to give up the stock if I'm going to get this special dividend. You know, dividends are nice, but, you know, I guess also, what does that mean? Will they actually be cut back next year? Think about this. If special dividends are being paid this year in front of any dividend tax increase, will you see regular dividends cut down next year in response to the fact if there's going to be, and this is if, an increase in the dividend tax rate? You would think that many companies did this on purpose. There was no reason to actually give a dividend unless there was something that was going to be gained by it. And if something's going to be lost by it, you wonder if they're going to start cutting back on that starting next year again, if in fact that rate goes up. So I want you to put that in the back of your head, write that down on a watch list somewhere or something, and think about that, Because if people actually are going and buying stocks for their dividends, will they sell them if companies start cutting their dividends? Just a thought. Okay, listen, I've got a couple of things to talk about, and then we're going to get to our guest. I want to talk about Taiwan stocks. If you've watched the Taiwanese stock market recently, it just blasted higher. And one of the reasons why I think this is great, the government mandated that state-owned banks must start buying stocks. How cool is that? Versus our government, where they do all sorts of ways to try to increase the wealth effect by lowering interest rates and QE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and Operation Twist and all these things that have gone on. These guys are direct. They're like, hey, buy stocks. You're going to go buy stock. We're, as a government, really, because it's government owned and controlled, going to buy stocks. So their stock market went up nicely when the realization was that the government was going to be putting money into the markets. Obviously, a lot of people rushed in. I thought that was really cool. The other thing I want to mention before we get to our guest is that the bond market, the bond bears are starting to growl, it seems. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about the continuation of QE, increasing it, staying with it forever. I don't know. It just seems to me that we're getting to a point where, you know, there's kind of no gain anymore in the constant pushing on these bonds. And a lot of the bond bears are there starting to really start saying, hey, you know what, pulling out of bonds. And some people who have been in it for years and years and years and a great trade for them are starting to lighten up their load. And you can read about that, if, you know, on any financial publication. You can start watching for that about people that were very, very bullish on bonds for some time, you know, starting to bail out on them a little bit. And, you know, the question then is, where are they going to go? They really haven't specified. But this is a big question that's going to be asked, I think, and is going to have to be answered. And maybe it's going to go into stocks, real estate. Maybe it's going to be going outside the U.S. for, you know, places that have been really underperforming for some time, and we see a rotation that starts to take place in the markets. We'll see. Of course, we got to mention GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a great source for sharing, collaborating, and spending some time with customers, family, clients, and doing it in a way that is very efficient, effective, and very, very cost efficient as well. You know, I can go to the extent of saying it's cheap for what you get. The fact is that with GoToMeeting, you can actually have a meeting right at your desk, and you can actually go with the HD video and see, you know, people eye to eye and talk with them in a big group dynamic. You can share the ownership of who's looking at whose screen. You can share documents. You can spend time with, you know, doing online seminars and webinars. And I mean, there's a whole host of things that you could do with this. And it just makes all of that so easy to deal with. Cuts back on your travel expenses. There's voice over IP included. I mean, there's just a lot there. And you get a 30-day free trial complete of all the different, you know, you're not limited here. It's a full trial for 30 days. All you have to do is go to gotomeeting.com and you have to click the little try it free button and put in the code podcast and you get a free trial for 30 days. What's to lose, right? Go check it out now. GoToMeeting.com, a great sponsor. And we're joined with Sid Oberoi, and he is with the S&P and Dow Jones Indices and specializes in the area of the VIX, which is this kind of animal that sometimes defies understanding. So I thought what we'd do is kind of talk about that a little bit, because there's a lot of questions that I always get about, hey, what's going on with the VIX? What's this? And it's supposed to do this and didn't do that. And then there's all these ETFs. So Sid, you're going to help me clear all this up, right?
I will definitely try.
So, you know, let's kind of, we talked about this some time ago, but let's talk about what the VIX is and maybe what it isn't. And also tell me a little bit about how it's structured.
Yeah, absolutely. VIX is an implied volatility index. So the way it's calculated is it's used, it uses the S&P 500 options prices. It basically calculates the volatility based on the options prices or the volatility as traders see it in the options market.
Mm-hmm.
It's not volatility today, it's a 30-day look of what the volatility, what the projection is of volatility. So it's a 30-day implied volatility. Now, a trader's perception of implied volatility between today and tomorrow morning may change depending on news and other market factors. So looking at VIX in isolation, the VIX spot number, for example, really gives you only a point-in-time view of what is going on in the VIX, in the S&P 500 options market, basically, in terms of implied volatility. Now, one of the things that you mentioned, Andrew, was ETFs based on VIX. And maybe I'm jumping a little bit ahead here, if you don't mind.
No, it's no problem, because I know that this is an issue.
There's a common misperception, and I think, and I've heard this time and again about, you know, all the ETFs that are based on VIX. And, you know, this is where I get a little bit concerned, because I think ETFs have become this sort of broad paint stroke kind of a thing, where everything that is exchange traded or that looks like an ETF gets sort of brushed together or combined together as an ETF. Most of the products that are out there are actually ETNs, slightly different structure than an ETF. And ETNs are typically issued by banks that have a book or a balance sheet to back that up. It's a note. The ETF, on the other hand, is a fund vehicle in itself that actually holds underlying assets. The ETF typically tends to use swaps. That's not to say that the ETF will not use swaps, but an ETN tends to use swaps more frequently, total return swaps, to gain that exposure.
Now, and that could be a problem, right?
It may or may not be a problem. It's just the total return swap is, again, it's a promise or a promissory note, if you will, by one organization guaranteeing the returns of whatever the underlying is, the benchmark is. So if at any point in time that organization is no longer able to fulfill that obligation, then there might be a little bit of an issue.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, so we talk about the VIX, the spot VIX, and the volatility, and you look at what traders are expecting, and it seems that lately there's been this change in mentality maybe. Now, maybe it's because we have all the governments of the world seemingly taking all of this quote-unquote free money, you know, that nobody ever has to repay, right? You know, and just and is just at all times doing what they can to, you know, rally markets and or at least to hold a hand underneath it, because it's quite amazing. I've been in the business many, many years, and I don't think I've ever seen so much central bank, we'll call it, I don't want to call it intervention, but central bank banter and the parade. And it's almost frightening that markets are constantly moving up or down or whatever they're doing in terms directionally based on what the expectation is of a central bank rather than the holistic standpoint of what earnings are, et cetera, because you have to put that into the equation now. You have to put the fact that, you know, okay, what's the central bank going to do? Are they going to extend? They're going to do this. And on a daily basis, the amount of talk from central bankers, which, by the way, nobody can hold them accountable for telling a lie. Let's be honest. Right?
I'll neither confirm nor deny. But
right. Yeah. You know, nobody can hold them. Nobody can hold them
absolutely.
Accountable.
Absolutely. I mean, they're basing their values or their views on certain things that they're looking at.
And their job is to stabilize the economy and all that. So the fact is, if their voice can stabilize it, they'll do it. Anyway, so what's interesting is that when we see so many of the interestingly problematic things around the world, given the Egypt situation, Middle East, China, his recent stock market hit a 2009 low, we're seeing, you know, the question about what's going to happen with Greece, the fiscal cliff, and on and on and on. You know, the VIX has been kind of hovering around this 15 range for a while, which in the old days was like 15. Give me some of that. You know, let's go buy some options out 2 months on that. But the problem has been that even on significantly rough days, weeks, whatever. I mean, I don't even think in the month of November when we took that big slide down, we didn't even get to 20.
Yeah.
That's remarkable. Isn't that remarkable?
And you're absolutely right. I mean, the VIX levels are, I'm looking at a 5-year chart right now. And, you know, when you look at the chart going that far back, you see the things that happened back in 2008 and or late 2008 and through most of 2009, and it almost skews the rest of the chart out, because in that 2008-2009 period, VIX hit 80 almost, and stayed in the 60 to 70 range for a while, and then finally trickled back down to below 20, only at the end of at the beginning of 2010. If you exclude that period and you look at more of the last 2.5-3 years, 15th is definitely pretty much close to amongst the lowest points that it's been at. I don't know, maybe it's the year end, maybe it's it's the lull before the storm. I mean, it's hard to predict what's going to happen with the VIX. But, you know, the one other thing that I want to just point out, going back to, our conversation on the VIX futures or the ETPs based on VIX, is that the ETPs are not, this is a common misconception, and I'm pretty sure, Andrew, you've heard of this, is VIX did this, but my VIX ETP, I'll call it, did not do that. VIX went up 20%, right, but my VIX ETP only went up 12%.
I think that's interesting, because there is, aside from the single, but they have the doubles and all that, those are disastrous. You could use them maybe temporarily for a day, intraday. I'll say intraday, not even a day, an intraday trade. The VXX is interesting, and a couple other ones that kind of, but those are based on a different measure.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And that's what I think a lot of people miss out on, is that they're not actually tracking the VIX. These ETPs are tracking indices that use VIX futures as the underlying.
Right.
Because VIX is a spot value. You can't buy a spot value.
And the problem is, you have the rolling with VIX, is you have either backwardation or
you have backwardation, yeah, contango, right, most of the times. You'll have contango, I guess, and backwardation issues, which have a negative carry, and then on top of that, the roll costs, and the roll costs on VIX futures can actually cause as much as 18 basis points on a daily basis.
Yeah, and then you add that up and you roll it and all the stuff, and
exactly, you compound 18 basis points on a daily basis, you're looking at a pretty significant decline over a period of time, and that's what I think a lot of people miss out on. So, you know, when people say, well, you know, I mean, for example, just through end of October, I just have some numbers here. Through end of October, VIX spot was actually down 21%. In the same time period, the short-term VIX futures index, which is the benchmark that VXX is based on, was down 74%.
And then the
midterm was down. Midterm, which is the S&P 500 VIX midterm futures index, on which VXZ is based on, was down 47%.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's a mess.
These are products that are ideal for, for the trading community, but not, I would say, I can't give investment advice, but these are not, people have to see what they're buying into. They have to read the disclosure. They have to understand what the products are.
Yeah, but the problem is that, by the way, I totally agree with you. First of all, the descriptions don't really give you a very good insight into what's happening. It's all about the labeling, and like anything else that we have, you know, you look at it, it says it's a VIX, it looks to compound this of the daily, but it doesn't tell you. And if it talks about swaps and things underneath, most retail investors are not going to know what that's about. They don't understand that.
I can only say that then people should be careful what they're buying. If they don't understand it, then, you know, I mean, I think Warren Buffett's avoided the 2000, you know, the bubble. The tech bubble, because he said, I don't understand how these companies are going to make money, so I am not going to buy it, right?
Yeah, but then he missed out on the rise, too. But that's another story.
Yeah.
But, you know, so now the thing is, and there was a couple of things. I think TVIX was one of the ones that really was interesting, because if you looked at, if I'm not mistaken, there was a, you could find the implied NAV of these various ETFs, right? Was that the one that blew up because it was just way out of whack?
So TVIX is the negative, so inverse of the VIX, basically. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's actually two times.
Yeah, it's a
inverse. Two times inverse. The issue there was that the issuing bank basically stopped new issuance, and the issuing banks stopped new issuance, and yet the market kept on trading, and so there was a premium that was built in that was about, I believe it was at the high, I think it was about 90%.
Yep.
Premium, and that was the issue there, where the issuing bank just stopped creating new shares new shares in that note, basically. So that was the issue there. And again, this goes back to, you know, understanding what is the structure of the investment for an ETF or an ETN, because there are different these type of issues that come up. I mean, this is a typical closed end fund type of a situation, where closed end funds typically tend to trade at premiums or discounts, right?
Right.
So this is so if the issuing entity stops issuing new shares for whatever reason that I really can't speculate on, then, you know, there will be these type of issues that come up where, you know, a product trades at significant premiums or discounts. And actually, TVIX was at 90%, but I believe that there were some other products that were, you know, trading not related to VIX. But that were trading at much higher premiums at that point, issued by other entities. So,
right.
You know, again, I think, Andrew, I think what I can say is that, you know, investors need to understand what they're buying. You know, they can't just look at, oh, this is, they're investors. That means they're in it for the long term. They need to look at what it is, what exposure are they really getting, and how are they getting it, and understand the risks of that product.
So if somebody would say, okay, I, for whatever reason, think that the VIX is a viable instrument to use to maybe hedge out some of the risk in my portfolio, if, you know, I'm just saying, okay?
Yep.
And let's just for a moment, just for a second, cut off all things not directly VIX. In other words, let's forget about the ETFs. Let's forget all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So the best structure is to what? Is to go out and buy an option on the VIX is at a certain date out. Would you, you know, either way, right? I mean, that would be the purest way of doing it.
If that's what investors are comfortable, perhaps they could. I mean, we have an index that basically combines the VIX, the implied VIX futures index with an S&P 500 exposure, and then based on the market environment, dynamically adjusts the weight between the volatility component and the 500 component. And there is an ETN out there issued by Barclays.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the S&P 500 Dynamic Vector, VEQTOR, Dynamic Vector Index. And Barclays Capital has issued an ETN on that product. And that basically dynamically allocates between the 500 and volatility. And based on the market environment, based on a number of algorithms, the methodology is transparent. It's available on our website at S&P at www.spindices.com. It's a transparent methodology. People can look at the methodology, understand the methodology. I'm sure that if you go on Bartlett's website, there's plenty of material on that index as well. First Trust just launched another one where it's based on the CBOE VIX Tail Hedge Index. Mm-hmm. That's an ETF that they launched.
Mm-hmm.
They launched it recently. I think it was in the last 2 or 3 months. And that does it launched end of August. And that does similar does a similar thing as well. So for someone who's looking at a hedged exposure to a core asset class such as the 500, that might be an alternative to consider, because people are talking about fiscal cliff and what could happen in the markets and whatnot. And if that is a concern, then it may be worthwhile looking into the vector index or the VIX tail hedge index, those type of indices that kind of are already looking at those I shouldn't say looking at those scenarios, but looking at based on the math or based on the formulas are incorporating some of the signals into it. I mean, is it going to be a perfect solution? No, I don't think so. I mean, Vector, in 2010 didn't do too well because of the trading environment. Again, like I said, every product is not going to do well in every environment, right?
So
investors just need to be careful what they're doing. But, last year, Vector was, I'm just pulling up the performances. Last year, S&P 500 on a total return basis was up 2%. S&P 500 Dynamic Vector was up 17.5%, almost 17.5%.
Right.
But in 2010, S&P 500 was up 15%, and the Dynamic Vector was up only 1.65%. So again, in different market environments, it's going to perform differently. This year, again, given how the market environment has been, it's not done as well. S&P 500 is up 14%, and I think Vector is up only somewhere in the single digits.
Yeah.
So again, it'll work in different environments. It may not always work as well. But I think that increasingly we have seen globally we've seen an increased interest in products that offer an embedded hedge in a core asset class. Exposure.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think it's incumbent upon investors to understand what they're investing in. I mean, this is kind of investing 101. This is just life 101. You don't just bite into a piece of food without knowing what the heck it is. I'm just saying, obviously you do it in a restaurant. You just take whatever's on the plate. But I think that the biggest issue right now is I hope that somebody starts looking into these things because I could, there's a natural gas ETF. This is a little bit off topic here, but there's a natural gas ETF called UNG, right? Mm-hmm. Which essentially, if you just short that forever, you technically go long, if you could, go long natural gas and short UNG, you're going to have a great, you're just going to be great. Or for that matter, just short natural gas and short UNG. So that, because UNG has a natural process between the fees and the rolls and all that it just can't keep up. Where natural gas was down a certain amount, but this thing was down like 75%. On a day-to-day basis, it may match or get close. But, there's this kind of inherent problem in these products, the commodity-based products, right? So that's a different thing than, let's say, SPY, which is not a commodity-based product. It's a it's an ETF full of stocks, right?
That's exactly right.
So
anytime that you incorporate derivatives, you're going to incur some costs related to roll and related to contango or backwardation, depending on the market environment. And I think those costs have to be taken into account when you're buying, as do costs related to, turnover in a portfolio, right?
Right. Exactly.
I think portfolio managers look at turnover costs in a portfolio when they're implementing that strategy all the time. So
right.
I think those costs need to be taken into account when coming up with a portfolio.
Right, exactly. And the nice thing is you write about a lot of these things, and over on VIX Views, you have a variety of things to do. So I encourage people to go check that out, because this whole VIX thing that happened over the last year or so, with people looking that they can grab the VIX and buy the VIX and hopefully, you know, protect themselves or emulate the volatility gauge, and then it not working and being disappointing, and then, you know, having to clean up the mess from there is do a 10-for-1 reverse split for T-VIX and, you know, whatever that happened. And, you know, just a really important thing just educationally to keep up with what's going on, because otherwise, you know, you're just going to, you may have the perfect idea. It may be the perfect idea. Hey, I want to buy the VIX because I think blah, blah, blah. And the VIX goes up 30%, and you're sitting here going, wait a minute, how come I went up 2%? So, I mean, you got to, I think, understand the package before you commit to it. So I guess we're both agreeing to that.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Hey, listen, I appreciate it, Sid. You're awesome. I'll make sure to send some people over to your site, because I think it's a good daily reading and information that they have over at S&P, and on particularly this particular section of the S&P site. Keep up the great work, my friend.
Thanks so much, Andrew.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah,
you too. Well, that was kind of interesting. That was nice. I'd like to hear from him. He has a lot of good information. And the site, by the way, is kind of a blog style. So if you want to check it out, there's some really good things on there. And if you're interested in the VIX and trading the VIX and what's going on with that, and obviously with all of the warnings and the flashing red lights and making sure that you have all the knowledge of what's going on, I think the one thing that we can learn from this, I think the most important thing from this discussion is that, you know, you can't judge an ETF book by its cover when it comes to the VIX or some of the other ones that really do have a name on it, like a double or triple. You know, those are good for certain trades, short-term trades, like when the key reversal moves in one direction or the other, you may want to pick those up. But you got to be really careful about some of those if you hold them for more than, let's say, a few weeks, if they're not exactly what you think they are. Some are different than others, but again, you have to be careful with that. Now, I mentioned also that we're going to talk about a game plan, or at least some things to think about for the month of December. Now, the month of December is interesting again because you have a lot of things that are converging. One of the things, aside from all the news items that are going on right now, you have also the end of your catch-up, and that's a lot of people that are in the hedge fund business, maybe the mutual fund business. They want to make sure they're positioned right for their portfolio, for year-end, for performance. So you have to kind of look at maybe, you know, that's where that Santa Claus rally comes from, you know, where they're looking to at the end of the year, especially on light volume during the Christmas time period and post-Thanksgiving, where you're going to see a lot of volatility, and that may or may not be beneficial for markets and your stock. So be aware that you have to really watch technicals at this time of year. Watch the volume, because it's probably going to be lighter as we move through the month of December. And you have to really pay very, very close attention and realize the importance of technical signs, and not just your traditional trend lines or MACDs and all that, but something that has a lot more importance, which would be things like, you know, where is the volume being traded the most on a stock? Where are the support lines? Where is the resistance? Keep that in mind. I think it's very, very important. You also have, of course, you know, the constant barrage of, you know, the central bankers that will come out and do their thing. But this year, I think what you're going to have is the Christmas and the Santa Claus rally concept being, you know, struck head on like a train wreck with the fiscal cliff. So keep that in mind there. And I think that being a bit more neutral towards defensive in this time of year, and if you have to be invested, you know, be very careful with what sectors you're really investing in. And I think that you'll be fine. But at the same time, I think that you have to realize that this year is a little bit different until we get to the end of the year. There'll be a lot of anticipation built up, and then let down, and anticipation and hope and excitement, and then let down until we get to the end of this year. And in particular, again, I'm going to say it again, the longer they wait to do something, the more you're going to see this happen in the markets. A few stocks that I want you to keep a particular look at and maybe put on your watch list. I mentioned the couple that are in the short category, the luxury retailers. But a couple that I think are really interesting, Align Dental, Align Technologies, they made the Invisalign. They had a kind of a rough quarter last quarter. But, you know, I want you to kind of keep a watch on this stock. It's a great company, good fundamentals, something that I like. We've been in and out of it, but it just, you know, just to take a watch of that. ALGN, 3D Systems, which is the 3D printing, very volatile, very, very, very volatile. But, you know, it hit like all-time highs last week, came back into it. But just watch this. There's a big desire for this company and the other ones that are in this genre, Stratasys, and there's not too many others. DDD is a symbol. Liquidity Systems, or Liquidation Systems, Liquidation, I call them Liquidity, LQDT. They came out with earnings and a cautious outlook, and a lot of the cautious outlook was really wrapped up in their acquisition and cost for the acquisition moving forward. And I think it was a little bit misunderstood by the markets at first, and you could see that with the 17% drop in one day after their earnings, but the 10%, about 9.5% increase the following day, I think, where better heads prevailed, looking at, hey, what's going on here? Why are they dropping their outlook? U.S. Steel, some of the stocks that have been just totally obliterated this year, you know, you look at the Kohl's and the Steels and many of the material companies, keep a watch at some of these names, because with if you see that the idea that China may be coming out of their recession, or not the recession, but their trough in terms of manufacturing, you could get a little bump at the end of the year. Some of these big name loved stocks over time, like a U.S. Steel, symbol X. Another company that has been doing great, check out this chart, HFC, HollyFrontier, a refiner. I mean, if we're doing all that we can in the United States for oil and natural gas production and energy production, all that, this could continue to be something that's very interesting to continue to watch, and we like that. The other one in the area of fracking and that genre is U.S. Silica Holdings. This is SLCA. Very volatile stock again, just as a point of reference. But if you look at the stock and you look at what they've done and what they are doing, it's a really interesting company. And they're using, you know, silicone and a few other things for the fracking process. And this has usually been done with, you've seen a lot of companies in the ceramic area and a few others that are working on this. And they do very well when they get a discovery of how you can assist and help in the fracking process and also in the energy development and a few other areas. It's just one area. But something that you can kind of take a look at, and I think that would be interesting. So there's a list of five: Align, Triple D, LQDT, X, HFC, and SLCA. Just some names to put on your watch list. Is all I'm talking about right now is put it on your watch list. Keep an eye on them. When you see them, you know, forming a good base or breaking out, as with any stock, you can obviously, you know, take a look at picking up position there and, you know, keep an eye on that. I'd also watch the special dividend companies. I think that towards the end of the year, you're going to see that many of these companies that provide the special dividend and actually pay out may lose a little bit of their luster when the reasoning comes in that there was this special dividend. And if there is, like I said, an increase in the taxes next year, that you may see, you know, some of the luster come off some of the dividend companies. So just be careful with that. Kind of like what's going on with the utility sector right now. You know, we're seeing a drop and drop and drop because they have heavy dividend. You know, and that's what they're known for. And those that buy them for their dividends. So just be aware of that. Next week, I believe we have Larry Williams coming on. We're also going to get Jack Schweiger in shortly. Frank Kersey will be on by the end of the year. And lots more. Check out the commodity alerts over at Trigger Point Research, of course. And if you're looking for your portfolio to be managed, that's what we're here for. We have very different strategies that you can choose from. As a matter of fact, we put the global allocation strategy, all about it, on the website. So you can find that, check it out, read about it. That has a different kind of, a different trading pattern and a different overall objective than does the TDIMG, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, which trades stocks short and long. This is kind of more of a traditional style for those that want more of a traditional portfolio. Until next week, thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz. Have a great week. Have a profitable week. And make sure to put the disciplinedinvestor.com on your daily reading list. I'll see you soon. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.